Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. I'm Senator Anna McKinney, co-chair of Finance. With me at the table this morning, co-chairman Kelly. Welcome.
Good morning.
Vice Chairman Chickie.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Bishop.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Donnelly.
Good morning.
Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chairman.
And we should be joined shortly by Senator Hoffman, who is working on budget closeouts as we speak. On today's agenda is SB 74, Medicaid Reform. The purpose of today's meeting is to walk through the fiscal notes and then set the bill aside. We are still awaiting a CS for the work that we've done yesterday, so some of the fiscal notes are continued to be in a draft form but are being finalized with numbers. Is there anything else to come before the committee before we begin the fiscal notes? For those following online, we're trying to copy those documents for you now and upload them because they haven't been attached to a formal CS. It's a bit unusual, but we are doing that as we speak, trying to get those documents available to you. But again, our CS has not come back from legal. A CS is a committee substitute for the amendments that were included in the version V violin SB, the CS for SB 74 finance yesterday. So we, I believe, 27 amendments were offered. I believe 26 were amended into the bill and one was withdrawn. With that, with the committee's support, my staff and I have divided the fiscal notes into departments so that we can bring one person to the table at a time and take on particular issues. So if it's not in a format that's comfortable for anyone, just let me know, but we do have quite a bit of volume to go through. So what I'd like to do first is to go to DCCED and ask Janie Hovenden, the Director of Corporation Business and Professional License, to identify themselves, come forward. And once that identification is done, then I'll direct the committee to the first fiscal note we'll cover. So if you could identify yourselves for the record first.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Janie Hovenden. I'm the Division Director for Corporations Business and Professional Licensing. And with me this morning is Sarah Chambers. She is the Division Operations Manager. To address the fiscal note for the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development.
Ms. Hovenden, could you pause? Ms. Chambers, could you identify yourself for the record?
Thank you. This is Sarah Chambers, Division Operations Manager for the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing.
Thank you. Director Hovenden, I need to get my committee on to the right fiscal note. So if I could direct the committee to two fiscal notes that this team will be discussing. The first, they both are for DCCED and their OMB component 2360. And actually there's only one, but we have a draft and an original. So the draft is what I'd like you to focus your attention on. So if you could give my committee just a moment. We're back on the record. Director Hovenden, we have a draft fiscal note in front of us, OMB component 2360. Senator Michicki, would you like to cover the financial, just a portion of it, before we have the director go into that?
That is, Madam Chair.
Back on the record. Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This fiscal note shows for FY17, 443.6 in personal services, 300,000. 3,000 in travel, 89.2 thousand in services, and 25,000 in commodities for a total of 560.8 thousand dollars. And then moving across with the same sort of split minus the commodities slot, you're looking at a total of 607.4 thousand on out from FY18 to FY22.
Thank you, Ms. Senator Michicki. Director Hovedin, could you walk us through the fiscal note from your department?
Thank you, Madam Chair. SB 74 already encompassed the PDMP portion that affects our division, and then we imported SB 98, which is the telemedicine. And what this is, the breakdown.
Director Hodeman, we're trying not to use, or if we use an acronym, try to let the folks at home know. So you're referring to the prescription drug monitoring program when you say PDMP?
Yes, correct. Thank you.
Thank you
for correcting that. This bill would incorporate $443,000 for one full-time permanent program coordinator, one, to manage the prescription drug monitoring program, two full-time permanent occupational licensing examiners, and two full-time permanent investigator threes, which would help with the telemedicine portion. That's the personnel services breakdown. Travel is $3,000, and this is to attend two board meetings, for the program coordinator to attend two board meetings and engage with communities and stakeholders in the state opioid control program. Services at $25,000. This is for legal costs to amend the regulations, printing, postage in the first year. $12,000 in services for printing and postage to notify prescribers who would be required to register. 2.2 for contracts to expand the PDM database from monthly to weekly. And 108.6 thousand for legal costs of investigations and appeals beginning in year two. And 50,000 for the department-wide services support for five new positions. Moving on to commodities, it's 5,000 in the first years for computers, office panels, office furniture, and other one-time needs for the five new positions. And that is the breakout. The division is a receipt-supported services, so any fees that aren't covered by any grants would be covered by licensees.
Senator Bishop.
Are we ready for comments on the fiscal notes, ma'am?
Certainly, I think that we need a little bit more detail. If we go into the analysis on the back, there is specifics on what the program does. I think the key point here is it's basically covered by receipts, not from general fund dollars, in an effort to monitor and make Alaskans safe as they utilize different opioids that are prescribed by pharmacists. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, ma'am. I mean, don't think that I'm being picky, but commodities, I know it's not a lot of money, but it's still $5,000, and I was just curious with the downsizing we've already been doing over the last 3 years, if in surplus that there's not already some furniture we could reutilize, and as well as computers.
Thank you, Bishop. Are there other comments on this fiscal note? It's a three-page fiscal note. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As you look at the number of people that are being added, it seems like $3,000 is not very much to, for some type of investigator to go out and have his travel covered for that. Is that my, where is my thinking wrong in the whole situation?
Director. Hovind.
Can you please reword that, ask that again of me?
As you look at the fiscal note, the second line down after personal services is travel, $3,000. You talked about the number of people that were coming on board, the investigators especially, that are going to have to travel in order to do an adequate job in investigating. $3,000 seems a little light for that. Is my thinking not right, or?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Olson, this $3,000 is investigations will try to utilize other state investigations and try not to, to do any traveling. It would be an exceptional case that would require us to go across state lines or to travel for investigative purposes. We would use other state investigators wherever and wherever possible.
Last question, Madam Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Has to do with the increase that's going to be happening for medical license here in the state of Alaska because of telemedicine. Is the fee for a person that's practicing telemedicine that may not even be in the state of Alaska, are his license fees the same as somebody that resides here in the state of Alaska? Or is there a blanket licensing of a telemedicine corporation?
Through the chair, they would be required to pay the same fee as an in-state medical licensee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Are there other questions from committee members? Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, I'm trying to think of a question because Director Hovind and I have been friends for a long time from a completely different universe, and I never thought in a million years we'd be sitting at a committee table. I don't have a question, but I just wanted to address you. Welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Kelly. Director Hovind and I have a question. Inside the fiscal note on page 2 of 3, that the department is suggesting that the division is seeing a 400% increase in medical license application since since telemedicine was expanded through legislation effective November 2014. And numbers can say many things. Is that number representative of one application, or is it representative of 10 applications, or is it representative of 100 applications?
If it pleases the committee, if I could ask Sarah to maybe address that.
Ms. Chambers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Sarah Chambers. The increase that we've seen over the last year and a half makes up the sum total of all of our physician and other licenses that are regulated by the medical board, which are in the hundreds currently for new applications. One example of how we are able to sort of identify this increase with telemedicine is that we're seeing or have seen since the effectiveness of HB 281, telemedicine companies themselves sending in stacks of 20, 30 applications at a time. We are obliged to license them if they're qualified, and so we are not certain at this time if they are all planning to practice under current law and come to Alaska to perform telemedicine services, or if they're preloading in advance of perhaps this bill passing. But we are able to see that these are telemedicine companies, not just people who may be licensed outside the state who are planning to come in and become residents of Alaska.
Thank you, Ms. Chambers. If I could follow up. So we're having 100 applications now for doctors willing to service the residents of Alaska. In a normal application period prior to the bill HB 281 that allowed telemedicine practice in Alaska, what was the average, how many doctors were seeking licensure in Alaska?
Madam Chair, I don't have those specific numbers in front of me. We'd be glad to get a table showing that increase to the committee. Anecdotally, though, since we have been studying this since that time, we would see typically 10 to 20 new applications a month, with that exponential growth just exploding after 281 became effective.
And I don't need it today, Ms. Chambers, but if you could tell me how long it took the licensing board to actually approve those licenses, and then how that is different today. Does it take the same amount of time? Or I know that's why the resources are being asked for. Is that possible?
And Madam Chair, I could answer that right now. We typically take about 3 months, anywhere from 2 to 3 months, to process a physician application, simply because of the amount of documentation that needs to come from hospitals where they have privileges, other licensing jurisdictions. Once that information is received, our staff takes, on average, about 20 days to process. So most of the time is processing time is actually outside of our administrative process. However, last summer, we did see delays increase due to the additional workload that was placed on staff. So we've taken several steps administratively to mitigate those delays. We are currently back to our 20-day processing window once we receive a complete application, and certainly any applications that need investigative review or additional board review due to malpractice claims or other professional fitness may take a little longer. So to sum up, we've gone from 8 to 12 weeks to last summer taking, in some cases, up to 6 months, and we've been able to remedy that as much as we can administratively, but there is no additional margin for expansion without expansion in staff.
Thank you. Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So essentially we went from 5 applications a month, just using your rough numbers, to about 20 now, 400% increase, right? Would you say that there's a fairly high probability that if, since HB 281 didn't allow out-of-state practicing, that if they're in preparation for this, that you may be close to licensing a number of the physicians that may be wanting to participate in the telehealth industry in Alaska? I mean, is there a possibility that this workload could be dramatically reduced in the near future once that the companies have their physicians licensed?
Through the chair, Senator Michiki, any forecasting is purely conjecture, looking at the number of telemedicine companies that are operating outside the state, and looking at the increase in healthcare demands, looking at the interest and growth in this type of business model across the U.S., I don't believe, our staff doesn't believe, that we have gotten anywhere near to exhausting the number of telemedicine companies or who would be seeking licensure in all 50 states, licensure to expand to Alaska. We have seen an increase over the number that we process for folks who are planning to practice in Alaska, but we think that the door is wide open and telemedicine will probably not be diminishing as an American healthcare model anytime soon.
Senator Michiki.
So, again, reminding the committee that these costs are covered by the licensees, do we have the right to looking forward, if they continue to be a larger proportion of the burden, let us know if you think it would be more helpful for there to be an out-of-state adjustment on the fees they pay, so they pick up a larger proportion, if they're the ones that are presenting the load. And I don't think we need to do it in this bill, but if it continues to be an issue, I would certainly be supportive of out-of-state physicians paying a higher license fee.
Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, not on the fiscal note, but in the general policy, you just said something, I think, that kind of wrapped up telemedicine in general. She said, we don't see telemedicine diminishing as a healthcare model in the future. I think that's true.
Thank you. Further questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Chambers, as you look at the 400% increase that is out there, I think right now there's somewhere between 20 and 2,300 MDDO types that are out there. And I realize this is not the full application process because the medical board is covering other elements of the healthcare delivery system. Is it true then you're planning on having roughly 8,000 or 9,000 physicians licensed in the state of Alaska that you're going to be overseeing?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, currently there are 4,100 physicians that are licensed, regardless of where their location is, and we can only see that expanding, whether that's 20,000, 50,000, it's hard to tell, but we're trying to take the numbers and experience that we've had and be as conservative as possible, but meet the needs of the service levels that we know our facilities are demanding.
Madam Chairman, I just have a last comment having to take off what Senator Bochicki talked about. As you look at people that are going to be out of state and not in the state of Alaska, and you start having issues and conflicts that are coming up, an investigator is going to have to go out of state and have certainly a larger budget to go ahead and investigate some of these infractions, whether they're valid or not. And so I guess I still go back to the $3,000 travel budget that's been proposed and kind of question its validity as we see the large area that needs to be covered as well as the number of newly licensed physicians and otherwise that are there. No further questions, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Bochicki.
We discussed and asked that question, Madam Chair, Senator Olson. Our expectation, the department's expectation, is that those investigations would take place in state, or I would assume that you would make a license no longer valid until they were able to participate so that it did keep the cost down to your departments. And as I said earlier, if you think it looks like we need, I mean, sort of like an out-of-state fishing license, right? It's something you all should think about, and I would certainly support.
Thank you, Senator Bochicki. Brief at ease. Record, it's 9:06, and we are. Is there any other questions on DCCED's fiscal note? Seeing none, I'd ask the committee to set that fiscal note aside and invite the Department of Law. Mr. Skidmore to the table. Direct the committee's attention to the fiscal note. The OMB component number is 2203. Senator Bochicki, if you could just walk us through the highlight financials on the front of the fiscal note.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is OMB component number 2203, Department of Law. The appropriation is the Criminal Division. Allocation is Criminal Appeals Special Litigation. FY17 numbers, $316,600 in personal services, $1.5 in travel, $39.8 in services, $6.1 in commodities, and $1.0 in capital outlay for a total of $365,000. And in the out years, Madam Chair, the numbers are consistent at that $365,000. The fund source below, primarily federal receipts, $273,700 and $91,300 in general funds.
I would just let the committee know, thank you, Senator Bochicki, that the funding source is going to be an issue for myself. That funding source should be matching money, possibly from receipts received from the program, but we'll take a look at that before we move this bill from committee in this fiscal notes funding source section. Mr. Skidmore, if you could walk us through your fiscal note.
Good morning. My name is John Skidmore. I'm the Director of the Criminal Division for the State of Alaska Department of Law. The fiscal note that you have in front of you talks about the adding the program for a False Claims Act. And what that False Claims Act essentially does is that it encourages citizens to file claims when they believe that there has been a fraud within a Medicaid application, either by a recipient or a provider. It encourages those citizens to make those claims because they can actually benefit from bringing it to the attention of the state government. The law would require the Department of Law to review those claims because any claim that is brought forward is actually brought forward on behalf of the state. And when the claims are reviewed, there are one of four outcomes. First, we can decline to have that go forward, that particular claim move forward, because it is already the subject of a criminal investigation. Second, we could simply dismiss the claim because we believe it to be frivolous. That's an important component that we've heard testimony on as this bill has moved its way through the legislature, that there are concerns there would be lots of frivolous lawsuits as a result of this act. So that ability to dismiss frivolous suits is an important component, which makes the review an important process. The third potential outcome is that the Department of Law could review it and determine that we would allow the citizen to move forward with the complaint on their own. We would not actually be in court prosecuting that civil action, but the citizen would have a lawyer that would be doing that, and that's their opportunity to have the greatest amount of benefit to themselves. The fourth possibility is that the state could look at it, decide that it was appropriate, and that the state's lawyers are going to pursue it, and in those circumstances, there would be a greater recovery for the state than for the citizen. The fiscal note in this case talks about requesting one attorney and one paralegal. We had initially contemplated having those individuals in the civil side of the Department of Law, but determined that a more appropriate place for them would be in the Medicaid Fraud Unit, otherwise known as MFUCU, for the Criminal Division. The benefit of placing it in that location is that the MFUCU is paid for 75% by federal funds, only 25% of state funds then have to pay for it. The other benefit that that brings is that instead of having just one attorney and one paralegal assigned to it, there are already two other attorneys that are within the MFUCU unit, the Medicaid Fraud Unit, as well as 10 investigators to allow them to have more resources to apply to the review of these cases as they are brought in. And conversely, the other benefit that exists is that that Medicaid Fraud Unit has in the last several years seen a uptick in the number of cases that they take, the number of recoveries that they have received, as well as saving the state what's estimated somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million. And even if there is not a significant number of False Claims Acts initially, those additional resources that are placed within the Medicaid Fraud Unit can also be used to further prosecute other cases within the Medicaid Fraud Unit, which we hope would only increase the types of recoveries that they are already seeing on the criminal side. So ultimately, what I can tell the committee is the option that you see in front of you here is, if this was fully funded, then that's the most robust scenario for the Department of Law and for the state in terms of pursuit of these false claims. I understand that there have been some questions or concerns about whether or not the state and the criminal division could absorb those costs without adding any additional personnel. And the way in which I would describe that is there is the possibility that the state could try to absorb them. It would look like this. It would mean that that fourth option of the state pursuing any claims civilly, we simply would not be able to do. The current attorneys would not be in a capacity to do that. However, the other three options would still be available. What then becomes complicated or difficult to assess is the number of referrals that are brought to the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. We don't know how many false claims will be brought in. We can't predict that. If there are a few and they are spread out proportionally over time, we don't believe that would be a dramatic impact or stress on us. But if there are a lot of claims that are brought in without those additional resources, then the policy decision that has to be made is, would you like to save that money at the expense of us having to cut back on the criminal prosecutions we're doing, or would you rather have that money so that provide that money so that we can be more robust? That's essentially the way that we see it at this point. If there are any questions that I can answer, I'd be happy to do so.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As you look at the fraud situation and the decision to go ahead and go, instead of staying in the civil area, go into the criminal division, I guess I tend to agree with that, because now you're dealing with somebody that could potentially go to jail, even though it's maybe a white-collar type crime. What's the department's position for a lack of term for having that kind of money to go after those kind of people, because this is kind of a new area that's starting out?
Well, in this particular case, when you talk about Medicaid fraud, the Medicaid fraud unit is devoted strictly to these types of cases. If you were talking about other white-collar cases, the department's ability to do that is limited. But because this is within Medicaid fraud, we do have resources to try and go after those types of cases. To your point of whether it is criminal or civil, the criminal cases obviously have a higher burden. A civil case would have a lower burden of proof. And so we believe having the civil option would allow the state to pursue even more claims that would be fraud that we wouldn't have been able to pursue civilly. And I apologize, I should have done that through the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Skip.
Which includes being able to recoup some of that money?
Yes.
On the civil, in the civil portion?
Yes.
Madam Chair, no further questions.
Thank you, Senator Olson.
Mr. Skidmore, how many attorneys does the state of Alaska have, one in the civil side and then one in the criminal? Do you have those numbers?
We don't have an exact number. I can give you an approximation. If you want an exact number, I would have to go and pull those numbers for you, ma'am.
Approximation is fine, civil and criminal.
So for the criminal side, we have approximately 120 attorneys currently. Those are attorneys spread across the state in 13 different offices, and they are responsible for prosecution of street crime across the state. Street crime I describe as murders, rapes, assaults, thefts, those sorts of things. Then there is also that same 120 includes a division that handles the appeals of those criminal cases, as well as a unit called Special Prosecutions that the Medicaid Fraud Unit is a subpart of. And that unit has a number of attorneys that handle various types of cases, child support, fish and wildlife. Most of those attorneys are paid for through reciprocal services agreements, otherwise known as RSAs. On the civil division, unfortunately, since I'm the director of the criminal division, I don't have those numbers as close at hand. I know that we have a total of, I think, around 500 employees, so I apologize. I don't know the number of civil attorneys, but I'd be happy to get that for you.
I can reach out myself. Let's not put it on your plate. You have other things to do. Is there questions from committee members? Seeing no additional questions on the fiscal note from the Department of Law, we'll set that fiscal note aside. Thank you, Mr. Skidmore. Next, I'd like to invite Deputy Commissioner Sherwood to the table. The remaining fiscal notes are from the Department of Health and Social Services. The first fiscal note I'd like to direct the committee's attention to is OMB Component 2665. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the fiscal note with the component of 2665, it's from the Department of Health and Social Services. The appropriation is Behavioral Health, and the allocation is Behavioral Health Administration. FY17 numbers in personal services are $115,900. Travels, $2,000. Services, $9.4. Commodities, 8.1, for a total of $135,000. Down below, it looks like a 50-50 match between federal and general fund. And then if you look at 2018 on out, the only reduction is in commodities for a total of $127,800, offset 50-50 down below in the between the federal and general fund match.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Do all committee members have OMB component 2665 in front of you? Mr. Sherwood, if you could walk us through the fiscal note.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With your permission, I'd like to give a brief overview to share some common information, perhaps to avoid some questions as we go through the fiscal notes.
Certainly.
Our department has 13 fiscal notes. Many of them are interconnected in the provisions spread across fiscal notes. Some fiscal notes address multiple provisions of the bill. I'm going to do my best to provide an overview of each note. I have many lifelines on the phone and in the room available for questions. I did want to let the committee members know that we have not had time to revise our fiscal notes to reflect yesterday's amendments where we have identified changes. I will try and point them out as I walk through the fiscal notes, but they will not actually be in the fiscal notes that you have before you. And finally, I think the thing that these notes do not include are estimates of financial participation from the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The trust has indicated its willingness to provide support in Medicaid reform, and we deeply appreciate their support and their partnership, but they have not yet made their final decisions about the amount and the specifics of that participation. That's happening later this month. And we wanted to respect their process, as we do greatly appreciate their partnership, so you won't see those in these fiscal notes yet. And that's, I guess, my introductory comments and overview. Before getting to this fiscal note, the Behavioral Health Administration, the bill calls upon the department to coordinate with the Alaska Mental Health Trust to manage a comprehensive integrated behavioral health system. We will plan and implement significant behavioral health reforms and will apply for an 1115 waiver as part of this process. This fiscal note reflects the cost of one position in the Division of Behavioral Health to work on the behavioral health redesign and the 1115 waiver and support the contracting efforts with an administrative services organization once the waiver is operating. And as the vice chair correctly pointed out, there is a little extra cost in the first year for getting the equipment for the new employee.
Deputy Commissioner Sherwood, is it fair to say that as we go through these fiscal notes that we're going to find one that has a negative number on it?
Madam Chair, yes, you will see several that have negative numbers as we go through here, but there will be some cost in some components.
Deputy Commissioner Sherwood, there are people that are tuning in online or off net, and so far all we've talked about is additional state employees that require additional investment versus the ones that will follow that do have cost-saving measures. So I just want to make sure everyone knows that the purpose of SB 74 is to reform the system to provide quality services to Alaskans, but also reduce or redirect some of those funds. So this is some redirection of funds, and the cost-saving fiscal notes are yet to come before the committee. Senator Machicki, question?
I do have a question, Madam Chair, and that is just some of the behavioral health with the CMS letter is going to be at a much higher level of coverage, I would assume. So this is a conservative number. Some of the matches will be higher than 50-50. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, that is correct. This is the administrative component, and the higher matches are around Medicaid services and certain specialized administrative functions, but this one is the general administrative match of 50-50.
Thank you. Further questions from committee members on OMB component 2665? Seeing none, let's set that one aside. The next fiscal note before the committee is OMB component 242. Senator Machicki, do you have that one?
I do, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
OMB component number 242. Department is DHSS, the appropriation is health care services, the allocation is medical assistance administration. In FY17, $355,900 for personal services, $107,900, commodities for $37,400 for a total of $501,200. You see a similar 50-50 match on the fund sources between federal receipts and the general fund match. On outgoing years, there's a slight increase on personal services and services, a reduction in commodities for 529, and then you'll start to see it trickle down until FY 2020, where it seems to become constant at 412,100 through FY 2022.
Deputy Commissioner Sherwood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for our Medical Assistance Administration component, where many of the administrative and support components for the Medicaid program are located. Many parts of the bill impact this component, including the fraud and abuse prevention, the primary care case management, health homes, emergency room reduction project, the coordinated care demonstrations, and the tribal cleaning policy change. The largest portion of this fiscal note is for personnel costs. One position would be added to develop regulations, policy, and work on appeals for the fraud provisions. Typically, we see an increase in appeals activity when we make these sorts of changes that may adversely impact providers. We would expect this position to be eliminated after 2 years. There are two positions that would be added to work on primary care case management, managed care provisions in Section 18, the health homes and telemedicine provisions of Section 19, and the hospital and emergency room reduction project in Section 20. One position would be added to implement and support the new tribal claiming policy. We need to track, process, and oversee the contracting provisions for providers required to get the enhanced federal match. We've increased our services line by $75,000 per year to accommodate a higher appeals volume around fraud and abuse, and that would be money that would go to the Office of Administrative Hearings. And that's really what drives the cost in this note. And Director Brody is available for questions.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. We've been joined by Senator Hoffman. Welcome. Senator Hoffman, we're on fiscal notes. We're under the Department of Health and Social Services. We completed Department of Law and DCCED prior to your arrival, so we're willing to go over those with you.
Thank you. I was at some committee closeout, so.
Your staff let me know, and I did let Alaskans know that you were on other state business in subcommittee. We're on OMB Component 242 as we speak. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, let's set aside OMB Component 242. Direct the Finance Committee members to OMB Component 2696. Should be next in your fiscal notes from the Department of Health and Social Services. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the Department of Health and Social Services. The appropriation is health care services, and the allocation is rate review, OMB number 2696. For FY17, there's 112.3 thousand in personal services, 509.4 thousand in services, commodities 9.6 thousand for a total of 631.3, 50-50 match below with federal receipts and general fund. That includes one full-time position. From FY18 on out, it looks like the only reductions are in services. It's reduced to 209.4 thousand and commodities down to 2,000 for a total of 323.7 thousand, and that is the identical number on out to FY 2022.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Deputy Commissioner Sherwood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Office of Rate Review sets most of our rates. Sections 17, 19, and 20 of the bill all contain provisions that would require payment reform or innovative payment methods. Under Section 19, the Department would need to apply for an 1115 demonstration waiver focused on innovative payment models. We've assumed we'd issue a one-time contract for $500,000 in FY17 to analyze and implement the payment models and have an ongoing $100,000 in subsequent years for actuarial work for updating and maintaining the rates. The department also estimates that we need to add one additional position to work on the payment reform projects. Section 20 of the bill requires that there would be an annual actuarial report on the coordinated care demonstration projects. We've increased the ongoing actuarial contract by $100,000 to reflect that additional work, for a combined ongoing cost for actuarial services of $200,000. That is what is driving the cost in those fiscal notes. Jared Kosten is online and available for questions.
Are there questions from committee members? Mr. Sherwood, the only question I have is when you're providing or presenting to the committee a range number on the salary schedule, are you giving us a starting range of an A at the beginning of the schedule, or are you choosing a payment method that's somewhere in the middle?
Madam Chair, I can't speak with certainty on that. I'm wondering if Sandy Eford might know.
I'm certainly welcome to have that testimony later, but if we know where that is selected now, that would be great.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Santa Eford, Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services. I would need to double-check and make sure all of the positions listed here follow this, but in general, we usually budget for around a C-step, allowing for someone that may have a little experience but not a high-level position.
If you could please confirm that for the committee so that we know where you're marking these at, because when we're going for 5 years with no increase, that tells me you've got something in there beside an A range.
Madam Chair, I will get that information.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members on OMB Component 2696? Setting that fiscal note aside. The next fiscal note before the Senate Finance Committee is OMB Component Number 233. Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the same Department of Health and Social Services under Public Assistance for the Appropriation, and the allocation is Public Assistance Administration, OMB Component Number 233. Madam Chair, this looks like a two-year program of contract services in FY17, $854,500. And this split looks like it's about 10% federal and about 90% general fund. And then the only other year of cost is FY18 at $349,000, and that split is something less than 10%, with something more than 90% being general fund, with 10%, less than 10% federal. No cost from FY19 through 22.
Deputy Commissioner Sherwood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two provisions of the bill impact the Division of Public Assistance. First, Section 13 requires the Department to establish an enhanced computerized income asset and identity verification system to deter fraud and eliminate duplication of benefits through the use of a third-party vendor. The annual savings to the state resulting from the system must exceed the cost of the system. In this fiscal note, we assumed that we would incur startup cost of $250,000 in FY17 for establishing an interface between our eligibility system, ARIES, and the third-party system. We would also expect to incur another $400,000 in state implementation costs for user acceptance testing, documentation training, increased supports through implementation, and similar needs. We estimate an annual charge for the service to average $349,000 per year, with it going live on January 1, 2017. We've assumed that if after an 18-month period the third-party vendor had not demonstrated savings, we would cancel the contract. Therefore, we have not shown any costs beyond FY18, and we would assume that if we were demonstrating savings, that we would use those savings to continue to finance the system. Section 17 of the bill directs the department to refer Medicaid recipients to various resources for education and career opportunities. We've included a one-time FY17 cost of $30,000 to program notices to be sent to recipients for this purpose, since we don't have face-to-face encounters with many Medicaid recipients at the time of application or renewal. Those costs would be shared 50-50 with the federal government. The majority of the costs for the third-party vendor for the eligibility verification system, we do not believe would be eligible for federal funding because We have similar interfaces built into ARIES, not exactly the same, but similar, and they have been funded by the federal government 90%, and typically they will not give us additional monies for functions that are duplicative of things they've already paid for.
Questions from committee members? Setting that fiscal note aside, I direct the committee's attention to OMB component number 2663. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The department is DHSS. The appropriation is Senior and Disability Services, and the allocation is to the Senior and Disabilities Administration. OMB component number 2663 for FY17, $97,000, $97.3 thousand in personal services, $2.3 in travel, $186.8 in services, and commodities at $2.5 for a total of $288,900, which is a 90, seems to be about a 90-10 split, with the feds picking up to 90%. The numbers increase in FY18. There's one position in 17-18 goes up to three positions to $318,300 in personal services, $6.9 in travel, $193.8 in services, and $7.5. The split seems to be less in FY18 for a total of $526.5. Then FY19, the services increase fairly dramatically for assumed systems development with a total of $873.4. From FY20 through 22, the number stabilized for a total of $343,200, and that becomes a 50-50 split with federal seats and a general fund match.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Deputy Commissioner Sherwood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we're going through these fiscal notes, I'm sort of wishing the legislative finance order that we're using here didn't put all of our administrative costs up front. So this is another administrative fiscal note. It's Section 19 of the bill requires the department to apply for 1915 I and K options, which will increase the federal funds we receive to provide home and community-based services. And this fiscal note would reflect the administrative costs associated with that. We anticipate having to add positions to plan, develop, and manage the two options. We would add one position in FY19 to begin the work and two more in FY18 as we begin to bring up the programs. We believe it's important to get the design and implementation of these options right. While they generate considerable general fund savings, we must ensure that eligibility requirements and service limits are well designed and strictly enforced if we're to achieve those savings. In addition to the cost of the positions, we would have costs associated with modifying the automated service plan, which is the Division of Senior and Disability Services Management Information System. We estimate that the $550,000 costs would be spread out over the first 3 years, and it would be 90% federal. Also in the services line is the one-time cost in FY19 of $346,900 for assessing individuals for the 1915I option. These would be individuals coming from grant programs to Medicaid where they would not have had an equivalent assessment out of those programs, and these costs would be half general funds.
Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, we'll set aside OMB component 2663. The next fiscal note before the committee is OMB component 2875. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is also for the Department of Health and Social Services. The appropriation is Senior and Disability Services, and the allocation is General Relief, Temporary Assisted Living, OMB 2875. This starts to demonstrate the savings from the program, no savings associated with FY17 and 18, and then the grants and benefits for operating costs are minus 4689.9 for $4,689,900 from FY19 through FY22.
Deputy Commissioner Sherwood.
Thank Thank you, Madam Chair. This fiscal note is the first of three fiscal notes that reflect the reduction of 100% general fund programs funding home and community-based services as a result of implementing the 1915I option. These expenditures will be offset in a later Medicaid fiscal note where the expenses will be 50% general funds, 50% federal funds. This note is for the General Relief Temporary Assisted Living Home, which pays for assisted living home care for vulnerable adults who don't qualify for Medicaid home and community-based waivered services. With the implementation of 1959, Medicaid will pay for a substantial amount of the services covered under this program.
Deputy Commissioner Sherwood, did I see that we've made that application already, or have you started the progress on that?
Madam Chair, we have, with the help of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, we've hired a contractor, HMA, to help us work on that. We began having the stakeholder meetings, the community meetings, the planning, and doing some of the preliminary analysis on that. In addition to both I and K options, and so we have started the work, but it is a somewhat substantial process to plan and implement.
Deputy Commissioner, I would just say that given the state of the dollars that you're requesting, the state needs the department to act expeditiously and efficiently, and FY19 seems like a very conservative date to start showing savings. So hope you'll go back and scrub those numbers and see if you can bring something back into FY18. That's a full year and a half out on a calendar year.
Madam Chair, for the K option, which is not reflected in this, we do plan to bring that up 6 months sooner. Currently, we are in the process in July of this year of having to implement major changes to our home and community-based waiver program around care planning and care coordination. Since this will impact many of the same providers, we wanted to be careful we don't overload our system with change at once, because as I noted, implementing this needs to be done very carefully if we want to achieve the savings. So we recognize the pressures on us. We will reassess, but I think there are other things going on in the system now which are going to limit our ability to move as quickly in this area as some of the other areas.
Questions from committee members? Seeing none, let's set aside on the component 2875. I'll direct the committee's attention to OMB component 2787. Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. These are all DHSS, so we'll skip that line. But for 2787, the appropriation of senior and disability services, the allocation of senior community-based grants. Similar to the last, there's no change in FY17 and FY18. In FY19, we start to demonstrate a savings of about $735,200 per year from FY19 through FY22.
Deputy Commissioner Sherwood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the second fiscal note showing reductions in 100% general funded programs as a result of adding the 1915I option. These senior grants pay for adult daycare and in-home services, which would be covered by 1915I for Medicaid-eligible individuals. So,
thank you. Questions from committee members? Seeing none, if we set that fiscal note aside, direct your attention to OMB component 309. Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Also DHSS, appropriation of senior and disability services. The allocation is community development disabilities grants, OMB 309. No savings for FY17 or 18. And savings begin in FY19 at $11,635,800. And those savings continue from FY19 through FY 2022.
Deputy Commissioner Sherwood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is the third of the three notes I mentioned around the 1115I, showing reduction in a grant program. Community Developmental Disabilities Grants provide home and community-based services to support individuals with developmental disabilities who are not served by the Medicaid Home and Community-Based Waiver Program. And the 1959 option would allow us to cover services for those individuals through the Medicaid program, bringing in the federal funds.
Other questions from committee members? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, where are these savings going to take place throughout the state of Alaska? Are they primarily in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau, or are there savings throughout the state?
Through the Chair, Senator Hoffman, there are savings throughout the state. People with developmental disabilities live throughout the state, and the services are available in many parts of the state. I think all regions of the state, they're available. I don't have the exact numbers on where the breakout are, but we can provide that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Sherwood. Further questions on OMB Component 309? Setting aside 309, the next fiscal note before the committee is OMB Component 317. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Also for DHSS, appropriations departmental support services. The allocation is the Commissioner's Office. 317 is the OMB number. This is a one-time for FY17 expense of contract services for $575,000, all funded through the general fund. There's no cost from FY18 through FY22.
Deputy Commissioner Sherwood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 27 of the bill directs the department to conduct feasibility studies for privatizing the Pioneer Homes, certain Division of Juvenile Justice facilities, and the Alaska Psychiatric Institute. The current fiscal note does not reflect yesterday's amendment putting the responsibility for the feasibility study for the Alaska Psychiatric Institute under the department, but I'll address that in a minute. For the feasibility studies of the Pioneers Homes and the juvenile justice facilities, we estimate that we would need $575,000, and that would, as noted, be general funds. Although we haven't included in the fiscal note yet, we estimate that there would be required an additional $160,000 in general funds, also in FY17, to conduct the feasibility study for privatizing API.
Questions from committee members? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you know what the backlog of the deferred maintenance number is on the all of the homes here?
Through the Chair, Senator Hoffman, I don't have that number readily available. We can provide it. It's not an insignificant number, I know that, but I would hate to take a guess.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Deputy Commissioner Sherwood, will you follow up with the committee and provide us that information?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Further questions on OMB Component 317? Setting 317 aside, the next fiscal note before the committee is OMB Component 320. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Also for DHSS, appropriations departmental support services, the allocation is administrative support services, OMB 320. For FY17, the total operating is $121,500. And FY18 on out is $111,500. There's a higher general fund match in FY17, and then from FY18 through FY22 is 50-50 with federal receipts in the general fund.
Senator Machicki, is there any full-time position change?
There is, Madam Chair. Full-time position is hired in FY17 and continues through the length of out to FY20-22.
Thank you very much. Deputy Commissioner Sherwood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This fiscal note is for our financial management services. Section 17 of the bill directs the department to prepare a report by November 15 of each year on the number with a number of complex metrics that span across programs and data systems. to plan, develop, and manage this new reporting requirement. The department will add one new position beginning in FY17. The cost of this is 60% general funds and 40% federal funds. And I will just confess, when we were reviewing these notes to prepare for this meeting, we realized we'd incorrectly carried a 50-50 match in the out years, and we will revise that when we submit our revisions for the amendments. I apologize for that error. And the reason this, for the 60% general funds here is this unit is essentially charged at a blended match rate for multiple programs, and that's their standard match rate. So that's where that comes from.
Deputy Commissioner Sherwood, does the department already have a new software program that's coming up that is supposed to be able to do these kinds of calculations?
Madam Chair, I think I would ask Stana Eifert to come to the table. I think she can talk a little bit more about what's involved.
Actually, if Stana could stay there, okay. If you could answer that in writing for me.
Okay.
I'd appreciate that. The ballots have rung, and we have three fiscal notes to go to complete today. So if I could get a little bit of update, I thought I'd seen a software program that could do something that you're suggesting you need this additional person for. Any other questions from committee members? Setting OMB component 320 aside with questions that will be revised. The next OMB component number is 2660, Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a little bit more complicated of a fiscal note. The appropriation is Medicaid services. The allocation is behavioral health Medicaid services, OMB 2660. The FY17 ask is $315,000, which is for operating, which is split between federal and general fund receipts. And that includes $2.7 million from the governor's FY17 request, which is met by federal receipts. In FY18, that number operating increases to $4.9 million, and then 19, $9.9 million, 20, $14.2 million, 21, $19.065 million, and that's the same for FY22. The federal receipt matches increase from FY18 through FY22, where finally the feds are picking up. It looks like it might be a 80-20. The feds will pick up $17 million, and the general fund requirement is $1.2 million for a total of $19
million. Senator Machicki, is there any estimated capital for this project?
Madam Chair, if you know that, there is. Thank you very much. Estimated capital for FY17 is $3 million. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. And I apologize, Senator Machicki. I asked the department to be covering these, and I appreciate you stepping up and doing the numbers for us. The only reason I noticed that I'd seen that one before. Deputy Commissioner Sherwood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the first of our three Medicaid services fiscal note. This one for behavioral health reflects two different parts of the bill. First, the provisions to manage a comprehensive integrated behavioral health program and do an 1115 demonstration waiver. And then the second is to implement the new federal policy on 100% federal claiming for tribal services. With regard to the behavioral health redesign and the 1115 waiver, there are several different types of expenses included in this fiscal note. There are increases to the grants and benefits line to reflect an increase in Medicaid expenditures related to filling the gaps in our behavioral health system and eventually cover larger substance abuse treatment facilities under the 1115 waivers. This is a blended match rate for different Medicaid populations whose federal match rate varies between 50 and 100%. The waiver begins in FY18 and grows over time. There are increases in the services line to reflect the cost of paying an administrative services organization to develop and manage a network of providers, manage utilization, monitor outcomes, and audit for fraud, waste, and abuse. Those are 50% federal, 50% general fund. This contract would begin in FY18. There is a two-year cost in FY 17 and 18 for a consulting contract of the services line to assist the department in designing and implement the managed behavioral care system and developing the 1115 waiver. That's also a 50% federal, 50% general funds cost. There's ongoing MMIS operations support in the services line beginning in FY 17, also 50-50. And these expenses are all summarized in the table on the top of page 3 in the fiscal note. So there's also a capital need of $3 million for one-time MMIS system changes. The other part of the fiscal note is to reflect the change in federal policy around claiming 100% federal funds for services provided to tribal beneficiaries. And we've estimated shifting some of the behavioral health services, particularly residential psychiatric treatment services, to 100% claiming from the 50% federal claiming. While these shifts don't affect total expenditures, they do impact the fund sources for the behavioral health Medicaid. And the table on the bottom of page 3 of our fiscal note shows our projections of the shift for behavioral health.
Are there questions from committee members? I think I'm going to hold the next two fiscal notes for Monday. I'd like the committee members to review them. The fiscal notes that you're going to review are 2077 and 2662. I'll be asking the department to go back and scrub their numbers. It seems like we have a whole lot of new employees and not a lot of cost savings that we've seen on the fiscal notes that have been identified already. The last two fiscal notes may be something a bit different, but we're going to need a little bit more conservation on the dollars that you're expending versus the dollars that you're saving. I know you're trying to be conservative on both sides. It seems you're a little aggressive on the personnel side to accomplish the savings. Senator Machicki. I'm sorry, Senator
McCallum. Positional dyslexia. thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to piggyback on your remarks a little bit there. I noticed that I think total we added 27 people, and there are some significant savings in the out years due to some of the adoption of the waivers and capturing some additional funds, which is a good thing. As the committee moves this out, it kind of comes back into my possession. I was happy to let the administration piggyback on my bill, and that's fine. I want it to continue to move quickly. But we haven't gotten estimations on some of the things that I think are some of the most significant reforms that deal with the heart of the system, not just taking advantage of the system as it exists, but savings from telemedicine, savings from eligibility verification, savings from care coordination and the health authority. There's some information on travel here, and that's good. I'd like to maybe find out more about that. And by the way, John, this is not coming at you or Val or anything like that. We just find ourselves in a position where we have a bill that we're depending on to get some significant savings, and I have kind of done the mental math that we're probably not going to get the 17 savings that I had hoped for, but we'll get long-term savings in a big way. But I got to have that information before I want to move the bill forward. I don't want it to go forward having just incorporated the important, but I think less significant adjustments that the administration has made through fraud reform, through adoption of waivers, etc. There is the more private sector piece that we all talked about, that we all hoped for. And as I said, the bill's kind of coming back into my possession. I love the work the committee's done. I appreciate the work the department has done to dig in and really help on this. But we've got to have better numbers on the other things, or my enthusiasm drops quickly, and it is my bill. So, thank you.
With that, the bells have rung some time ago. We should have a CS by sometime this weekend. We'll get those to your staff as quickly as possible. Given the presentation this morning, I'm not sure that we'll be prepared to move the bill on Monday. I hope that we can scrub those fiscal notes over the weekend and see what we can do with the numbers, but that is not what the team has expected or anticipated. With that, we meet again on Monday morning. We have Medicaid before us. It's at 9 a.m. Monday, March 7th. And then we have the operating budget at the same time. So again, I'm not sure that we're going to have enough time to move that bill out on Monday morning, given what we've heard this morning. With that, we're adjourned.